Magandang gabi, Podmates. Howie Severino muli. Sa isang talakayan, kasama ang respetadong human rights lawyer na si Attorney Chel Diokno tungkol sa 50th anniversary ng martial law. Magandang gabi sa iyo, Chel.
Magandang gabi, Howie, at sa lahat ng nanonood at nakikinig. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for joining us. Chel, ang father mo, the late Senator Jose Diokno, no? Ang batchmate ni Senator Ninoy Aquino bilang a political prisoner sa ilalim ng martial law, they were among the first to be arrested, no? Noong September 1972. You were 11 years old at the time and have vivid memories. Take us back to that time, no?
Yes, actually, yung Proclamation Number 1081 declaring martial law was signed by Ferdinand E. Marcos Sr. on September 21, 1972. Pero hindi niya talaga pina-implement yan until September 23 in the early morning, mga alauna ng umaga, nung dumating sa amin tahanan na maraming mga sundalo, may dalang mahabang armas. I recall being there when my father opened the door and meeting the head of the arresting team. Ito, if I remember, parang colonel siya. At ang una niyang sinabi sa tatay ko ay, "We are inviting you to the military camp." But obviously, it was an invitation he could not refuse, because when he asked what was the nature of the invitation, he was told that he had to go. And that was the last time I saw him, or the family saw him, as a free man for the next 2 years. Hindi ko talaga makalimutan yung panahon na yon, dahil talagang bumaliktad yung buong mundo namin nung araw na yon.
And how many were you in a family?
Well, we are 10 children. Ako, I'm number 8 out of 10 kids. Dapat tulog na ako noon eh, kasi 11 years old lang na ako noon. But it so happened that my siblings had some friends over that night, and I was kind of playing hooky, staying up with them. I recall before we realized that there were soldiers there, one of my sister's friends, nagpaalam siya, sabi niya, "Lalabas lang ako, bibili lang ako ng Yossi." But he came back in just a few seconds and his face was really drawn and pale. And he said, "Ang daming mga sundalo dyan sa labas." And that's how we realized that there were soldiers outside the house.
Okay, just for the record, no, kasi nabanggit mo, and that's an intriguing detail. And it's not the first time we've heard that former President Marcos actually signed the proclamation on September 21, but the start of the implementation was September 23. So, kung ganon, why are we remembering September 21 instead of September 23? Or how should we be remembering September 23?
Well, September, siguro naalala natin ang September 21 dahil that's what's on record. That's the date you see on the proclamation. If you look at the succeeding issuances, ang nangyari kasi, September 21, he signed proclamation number 1081. September 22, the next day, he signed a series of general orders and letters of instruction, which were then implemented on September 23. One of them was General Order Number 3, which authorized the Secretary of Defense at that time, Juan Ponce Enrile, to arrest the persons that were on a list attached to the general order and anyone else who was supposedly doing things in furtherance or in connection with the crimes of insurrection or rebellion. At yon ang ginamit nila sa pag-aresto sa dad ko at sa ibang mga members of the opposition and others, you know, teachers, activists, members of leaders of student groups and labor as well.
Why was your father arrested?
Actually, we were never told any reason at all. And my father was never charged ever with any crime. No warrant of arrest was ever issued against him. No case was ever filed against him. So it's conjecture on our part, but I think it's pretty obvious that it was because he was seen as someone who could speak up against the regime. My dad was known as someone who really fought for our rights and liberties. Talagang lumalaban siya, hindi lang sa loob ng Senado, pati sa labas, para sa ating kalayaan. And I think they perceived him as a possible obstacle to the imposition of a dictatorship.
You've told the story that one night while your father was in political detention, may dumating na truck at hinatid sa bahay ninyo yung mga gamit ng father mo, no? Na yung mga gamit niya doon sa sa piitan, ano? And then you were not told why, no? And then later on you found out nilipat pala siya sa malayong military prison, no? Sa Nueva Ecija. Bakit kailangan pa siyang ilayo? I mean, what kind of threat was he at the time? Why was he such a danger to the regime na kailangan pang gawin lahat yun?
Again, we were never told any reasons why by that government. In fact, the entire detention of my father was very arbitrary. Sometimes they would be allow us to visit, and suddenly when we would go there, they would say, no, you can't see him today. Sometimes he would be allowed visits by counsel. Other times he was denied even the right to confer with his lawyers. Ang pinaka-abogado niya noon, si Lorenzo Tañada, si dating Senator Catani. And when this happened, yung incident that you mentioned of the truck, we had not been allowed to see him for, I think, several weeks. Now, nung isa pang incident yun talagang hindi mabura sa paalala ko yun eh. My mom woke me up early in the morning. It was just like dawn. And she told me, come down with me because the military is downstairs. They're in a truck and they're returning all your father's things. So pagbaba namin, you know, lahat ng mga pinasok namin sa kanyang selda, yung mga libro, mga toaster oven, etc., isa-isang binababa ng mga sundalo. And lumapit ngayon yung mom ko sa kanila. She asked the soldiers, bakit nyo ginagawa ito? At nasaan yung asawa ko? At, you know, she was asking them because she really wanted to know. We had no idea what had happened to my dad. Patay na ba yung asawa ko? And they didn't say a single word. Tingin ko, they had been instructed not to talk. When they put down the last item on the floor, they just got into the truck and left. And, you know, that's one of the so very traumatic experiences that I had during martial law. Kasi nakakulong na nga yung tatay mo, wala namang dahilan, tapos bigla na lang hindi na namin madalaw, and tapos binabalik pa nga yung gamit nila. Kaya hindi namin alam talaga kung patay na ba siya o kung ano yung nangyari sa kanya.
How widespread was this experience? Of course, your father was a very prominent critic. He was in the Senate. A number of other lawmakers and politicians were also arrested and jailed. No, but yung mga ordinaryong tao, marami din bang apektado itong mga ganyang klaseng persecution?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Recently, I came across, I actually reread the supplemental petition that Senator Tañada had filed on behalf of my father for his release. And I came across a footnote there where he cited a Manila Bulletin report that said that from September 23, when martial law was implemented, 1972, until the end of December of 1972, 8,251 persons were arrested under Proclamation No. 1081. All in all, over the 14 years of the dictatorship, the estimate is something like 70,000 people who were arrested in the span of 14 years. Kaya marami-rami din yung mga nabilanggo noon. Hindi pa nakabilang doon yung mga nawawala na hanggang ngayon, marami pa rin mga pamilya na hindi nila alam kung anong nangyari doon sa mga kamag-anak nila.
Okay, 70,000, no, sounds like a lot of people. Sabi mo, they were arrested and I guess most of them were jailed for a period of time throughout those 14 years, no. Pero may narrative kasi, Chel, no, na kung di ka naman kritiko, kung di ka naman quote-unquote pasaway or combatant, hindi ka naman makukulong, hindi ka naman masasaktan, hindi ka naman masasalvage, huwag ka lang mag-ingay. Kasi kung ordinaryong mamamayan ka lang, yung mga panahon na yon, I'm just describing the narrative na didinig and kumakalat nga sa internet. Stable naman, tahimik yung buhay noon. And it was a period of development and progress, no? And it seems believable to a lot of people kasi, well, unang-una, you know, most people alive today have no memory or experience with martial law. And madaling sabihin na, yan, ginawa yan nung panahon ni Ferdinand Marcos, no? Yan, nangyari yan nung martial law. Itong mga, yung infrastructure, the highways, the bridges, etc. And marami naman talagang nagawang structures ng mga panahon na yon, ano? And while itong mga kwento mo, you know, no matter how truthful these stories are, they're not visible, no? They're not visible. We're basically talking about, you know, most people who experience those things, no? Yung imprisonment ng panahon na yun, you know, wala na sa mundo, no? We're just memorialized, trying to memorialize them now, no? But the so-called achievements, those are very visible, no? So for someone like you who's, you know, who wants everyone to remember those days, that's a pretty big obstacle.
Let me paint a picture of how it was. Imagine one man had the power of life or death over you. That one man could put you in jail for as long as he wanted. He could take away your properties. He could ruin your reputation and destroy your life. He could also make you rich if he liked you. He could pass laws that would affect everyone's lives. He could take over the radio stations, television stations, and newspapers and control the information that would reach the people. He could pretty much do anything he wanted in our entire country. But you don't have to imagine that, because it really happened. I was there. You know, I was 11 years old when martial law was declared and 25 years old when the Marcoses fled Malacanang in disgrace. Lumaki po ako sa ilalim ng isang diktadurya. It was like living in a modern Game of Thrones. Kung ikaw ay kaibigan ng House of Marcos, kung ikaw ay kaalyado nila, masaya ang buhay mo. Pero kung meron kang sinabi na hindi niya nagustuhan, o kaya talagang nanindigan pa ka para sa prinsipyo mo, you stood up to speak truth to power, well, heaven help you, because very few people would be willing to help you in our country at that time, especially in the first part of martial law. And what happened to my father is a prime example of what I have been talking about. Because wala naman siyang ginawang masama, wala siyang ginawang kriminal, wala nga siyang kaso laban sa kanya, pero ikinulong siya at pinatahimik siya. And mabuti pa nga, some people say, and I've heard it, and I do agree, we were lucky. My family was lucky among those who had the courage to stand up to that dictatorship. Because there were others who stood up to that dictatorship who suffered really terrible fates. They were arrested, tortured severely, electrocuted in their genitals, raped, given the water cure, you name it, they were subjected to it. And they gave their lives for our freedom and for our democracy. Kaya sa lahat ng nanonood at nakikinig, nandun po ako ng panahon na yon. I saw it happen with my own eyes. At I can attest that what we were under at that time was not the golden years at all. It was a one-man rule, tyrannical dictatorship.
Chell, you and so many other people, no, who lived through that time, even those who came after you, no, have been active, no, speaking out about this, memorializing, trying to teach others, may nagkaroon ng mga speaking tours ng mga biktima at saksi ng mga panahon na yun. You were just designated chair of the Bantayag ng Mga Bayani Foundation, which is a organization that has been trying to memorialize the victims and you know, the martial law experiences for more than 2 decades now. And a lot of these stories, no, have been repeated again and again. You know, your sister is a prominent historian, naging chair pa ng National Historical Commission of the Philippines. We've had 2 Aquino presidents. Siguro, for a lot of people, the big question mark is, we have all of these activities to memorialize, remember this time, this dark time in our history. And yet, within our lifetimes, we now have a Marcos restoration, no? What is the nutshell explanation for this? Kasi parang there are two sides of this era, no? On the one hand, there are many like you actually who have been talking about this, speaking out. There have been books, no? But on the other hand, no, there's another narrative. Masasabi mo natin, nanalo yung narrative ng mga Marcos, kaya there's another Marcos president now in our lifetimes?
Iba ang take ko dyan. May isa kasing epekto ng martial law that has hardly been discussed. And that is how Marcos captured the justice system and poisoned the legal profession. One week after Marcos declared martial law, he issued letter of instruction number 11. Inutusan niya lahat ng mga judge, pwera lang ang Supreme Court, but all other judges to submit letters of resignation. Nahawak-hawak niya yon. He could accept those letters of resignation at any time for any reason or even without any reason. And he did. So in that one stroke, he removed the independence of the judiciary. The following year, 4 months later, he changed the constitution and he inserted the provision there in section 10 of the transitory provision. Sabi niya, lahat ng mga judge hanggang justice sa Supreme Court, upo kayo hanggang age of retirement, pwera na lang kung mag-decree ako, natatanggalin ko kayo. So what happened? He institutionalized the dependence of the judiciary on him. Hawak niya sa leeg for 14 years lahat ng judge at justice sa buong Pilipinas. But imagine the effect of that on the legal profession. Abogado ka, gusto mo ng malalaking kliyente, gusto mong kumita, pero yung mga kinaharapan mong judge, alam mo, dikit yan. They rely on Malacanang to sit as judges. O di kailan, didikit din ako sa Malacanang. Those lawyers established networks and became glorified fixers. That's what they became. Unfortunately, nung nawala ang martial law, hindi naman na-dismantle yung mga network na yan. And some of those networks continue to operate today. In fact, I tell my law students, alam niyo, mahirap mag-aral ng law, maghirap pumasa ng bar. Pag kayo ay naging abogado, the very first moral decision of your life is going to be, am I going to practice law honestly? Or am I going to do what other people in my profession do, which is fix cases? Now, what's the connection of that to the Marcoses? Well, they had their tentacles into the judiciary and the legal system for 14 years. And that has had a lasting impact. And that explains why we have so little accountability in our country, kung bakit wala talagang pananagutan at kung bakit ganitong kabulok yung ating sistema ng hustisya.
So, but how does that explain yung paniniwala ng marami na, kasi yun, judiciary yun, no? But we're talking about yung level ng consciousness ng mga ordinaryong tao na maaring never had a court case, never actually encountered the judicial system, no? How does that explain yung paniniwala ng mga tao na, well, one, hindi naman ganun kagrabe, hindi naman ganun kasama. Number two, kahit may mga may mga hindi magandang nangyari, it's either time to move on or ang tagal na nangyari yan, the good outweighs the bad.
Tingin ko marami factors yan kung bakit ganun na nangyari. One is the fact that the dictatorship was very selective in who it targeted. Only those who really were seen as possible obstacles to their keeping power and making use of that power. That's one. Second is the fact that starting around 15, 20 years ago, the internet began to be flooded with videos that depicted our history, really were historical distortions of what happened during martial law. And these videos were targeted at the people who were young at that time, who are now members of the working class. And if you saw those videos when you were 13, 14, or 15 years old, wala ka naman talagang alam tungkol sa nangyari nung panahon ng martial law, madaling-madali kang madala ng mga ano na yon, mga palabas nila noon. That is another factor, I think, that has come in the way. The third is the fact that we have so many problems today, and many of our people are, para lang makakuha sila ng sapat na pagkain pang araw-araw, ay problema na ng marami sa mga kapabayan natin yan. Kaya itong mga problema, yung mga nangyari nung 40-50 years ago, yung mga ganyan, ay medyo, I understand, it's not something that is na talagang malapit sa consciousness nila. Kaya there are other factors as well, but I guess I can stop there. Many reasons yan kung bakit ganito nangyari.
You think there were missed opportunities, no? Kasi, of course, the Marcoses did what they could, no, to control the apparatus of the government. Pero mula noong 1986, Well, we've had two Aquino presidencies. We had an FDR presidency. He was a hero of EDSA, no? He rebelled against Marcos, no? So there was this long period when many of these issues could have been laid to rest, no? Do you think there were missed opportunities during this time? So we could have actually avoided this situation now?
Definitely. For example, why is it that until now there are still so many cases that have not been resolved about what happened at that time involving the Marcoses? Why is it that some of these cases have been on appeal for decades? These cases should have been resolved quickly because we are talking about what the plunder of a nation, basically. Succeeding administrations actually neglected our justice system. Pinabayaan talaga. Up to now, how much of the national budget goes to our judiciary? Eh, hindi pa umaabot ng 2% yan on the average. Up to now, why is it that cases take forever to be litigated? Shouldn't corruption cases be at the topmost priority of the justice system? Because they involve the people's money. If the succeeding leaders of our country had put their foot down and said, we want to see these cases resolved because we want closure, we want accountability, then I don't think we would have reached the situation we reached today.
May mga nagsasabi na if we could not get accountability under the Aquino presidencies, and for example, just find out once and for all, you know, who ordered the assassination of Ninoy Aquino, who was in the custody of military escorts, no? We will never find out. So ang tanong dyan, the environment back then, the political, even maybe legal environment, was a lot friendlier to really finding out, no, kung ano talaga yung nangyari. So was it a matter of delicadeza? Previous administrations didn't push for this kind of accountability dahil parang they, you know, there was a feeling na, you know, they might have a personal interest in it. Or is it just a basic failure of our system that even during administrations which would have had an interest, you know, not just personal but political interest and, you know, the national interest to find out what really happened during martial law, hindi pa rin naganap, no? There's still so many questions, and now we're stuck with the questions kasi there will be not much interest now to find out the answers, di ba?
It's very hard to speculate on what was in the minds of the leaders who succeeded Marcos. At the same time, there are cases, you know, to find the truth about, let's say, the assassination of Ninoy Aquino, you need people who will talk. You need witnesses. And if those witnesses are not around, either they're afraid to talk or they have been silenced, then that's true. We will never be able to know the truth.
One question about what happened back then is, hanggang ngayon, there's no admission, despite, you know, no admission by any of the Marcoses that all of these things that we've been discussing happened, much less an apology, no? Wala man lang admission, no? I'm just thinking, wouldn't it even be in their interest? Kasi they've talked about moving on, no? I mean, kaya hindi maka-move on din yung bansa, no? Kasi there's been no admission, no apology. Yung hesitancy nila to admit anything, is there a legal consequence to doing that? Is that part of the issue here? Kaya ayaw mag-admit ng kahit ano? Or is it just a matter of pride?
Well, nakakapagtaka nga yan, Howie, kasi there have been at least 4 Supreme Court decisions. 3 of them made very clear findings that there was ill-gotten wealth accumulated and that was forfeited in favor of the government. Pero in law kasi, we have what we call extrajudicial admissions as well as judicial admissions. At ebidensya yon. So kung ikaw halimbawa ay umamin na meron kang ginawang labag sa batas, ay maaari din gamitin yun na ebidensya laban sa'yo sa isang pending case. You know, an apology cannot be, no one can tell anyone else to apologize. That must come from within that person. And if they don't want to apologize, that's their choice. Pero accountability is different. Kasi accountability, ang taong bayan ang may interest dyan, ang buong bansa ang may interest dyan. At yun ang isang kinalulungkot at kinababahala ko na hindi pa talaga natin nakikita yung buong puwersa ng pananagutan pagdating sa mga nangyari ng batas militar.
Okay, ngayon, you know, I know that we hate to make this sound like a contest, but sometimes I hear na yung sa dami ng namatay sa panahon ni itong administration ni Pangulong Duterte, nakatatapos lang, he's actually worse than Marcos, no? I mean, we've heard numbers of dead, no? And I know you've been involved in this issue as well, no? You know, there have been various numbers, but most of the numbers actually dwarf the number of people killed during the Marcos time, no? Is it useful to be comparing? Kasi, of course, ngayon, you know, there's an International Criminal Court investigation, and of course, it's, you know, the numbers actually matter, no? For that, no? What's your reaction, no? When you hear something like that, na, is it useful to be comparing, you know, the number of killings during the past 6 years and during the time of Marcos?
I think we should also look at other factors and the impact of those governments on the lasting impact that they had on our country and our society. For example, during the dictatorship, he practically destroyed civilian supremacy over the military. Mm-hmm. He destroyed all the democratic institutions that were supposed to be checks and balances at that time. Wala, nawala yung Congress. He took over the lawmaking power. Nawala yung media, which is known to be as the fourth estate. He really took over and silenced the media. All the other possible checks and balances were eliminated because of the fear and the fact that law emanated from the barrel of the gun at that time. How can you speak truth to power when there's a gun right in your face? And basically, that's what military rule, that's what martial rule law was all about. The other aspect of that is, actually, we don't know the real exact numbers of people who were killed and who disappeared in both administrations. The Marcos dictatorship, one of their trademarks was secrecy and lack of transparency. Hindi ka naman lang makapag-access ng information noon. Wala naman right of information. Walang-wala nung panahon na yan. Kaya hawak nila lahat ng nangyayari, and the process of reconstructing it, I'm sure there are cases that have never come to light that involve people who were killed. And for example, just recently I was talking to some friends from Mindanao, and they were saying, there are many undocumented cases of killings that happened during the martial law period in that area. Kaya hanggat makuha natin yung lahat na information, it's very difficult to compare. The third point to me is that whether you talk about 1,000 people being killed or 20,000 people being killed, the fact that people are killed extrajudicially without due process, where the those in power are the judge, jury, and executioner, kahit sabihin mo 100 lang yan, 1,000 lang yan, it's still a terrible perversion of our legal system and our democracy.
Well, nabanggit mo na may mga events, may mga massacre or crimes, no, from that period na na-overlooked, no, and then we hardly have any memories of them, no. But yun nga, unti-unting nabubuhay yung mga alaala na yan, and some of this information is just coming to light, no, so many decades later. Lalo na yung sinasabi ng iba, tulad ng may yung bumanggit sa'yo, no? I mean, a lot of these events happened in the regions, no? In Mindanao. Kasi kung malapit lang sa Metro Manila, chances are ay mas mabilis natin malalaman, no? But are there any of these events na na-overlook that we should try to remember? I mean, meron ka bang naaalala ngayon?
You know, most of the documentation, as you said, involves the urban areas. Na hindi lang naman dito sa Metro Manila, but other medyo progressive cities. Ang talagang kulang na kulang ay ma-document natin yung mga nangyari sa ibang, lalong-lalo na mga rural areas. Because those who were victims and their families, wala naman silang access sa abogado noon, wala silang access sa mga NGO, o kung sino man ang malalapitan nila, para unang-una malaman kung na may nangyari, and pangalawa, ma-document. Kaya yun, may mga butas talaga pagdating sa knowing the full picture of that period of time.
So part of your role now as the chair of Bantayog ng mga Bayani is to memorialize these events, no? How are you working with others in doing this?
Well, it's I just assumed that position. At marami akong gustong gawin. I have a lot of plans. Right now, they're still only beginning to be implemented. And as we will, I hope that in the coming months, we'll be able to do a lot to really make the mandate of Bantayog even stronger than it is. Lots of people look at Bantayog really as the place to go when you want to know what happened during martial law. I want to keep that on. And at the same time, I want to make it even more accessible. Siyempre, yung isang challenge din ay ma-access, mabigyan natin ng access ang taong bayan sa internet. Because that will make it much easier for researchers and anyone who's interested in history to find out what happened during that period of time.
Well, you know, there's maraming tayong listeners hindi alam na there's actually a government agency that's tasked with memorializing, no? That's funded by the government, no? Itong Victims of Human Rights Violations Memorial Commission, no? I actually interviewed the executive director last week, si Chuck Crisanto. And this commission was created by law 10 years ago and it started around 2012 or 2013. However, sabi nga niya, it hasn't been a friendly political environment now, no, obviously, no. Kasi one of the projects under this commission is to build a martial law museum. Meron ng design, nagkaroon ng architect and contractor, pero maybe to no one's surprise, no, nagkaroon ng obstacles, no? Mukhang baka hindi pa magagawa itong project na to, no? So it's really up to maybe agencies or organizations outside government, no, to memorialize, to remember in this kind of environment. Hindi na natin maasahan yung gobyerno, or are you still holding out hope that, you know, yung commitments ng gobyerno on ay maasahan even during this time?
Well, if the government will do it, that would make me very happy. But I don't think we are in a position to rely on them. And our attitude basically is we do what we can with the help of everyone who wants to help us.
So para sa mga ordinaryong Filipino, or maybe people in the education sector, etc., what would you advise them? What can they do to help in this mission?
Spread the word. Sana po ay may paliwanag natin ang katotohanan, yung talagang nangyari nung panahon ng diktadurya. Unang-una, let's be direct about it. Tingin ko, there's no other word that best captures that regime except a dictatorship. Kasi talaga naman one-man rule ang nangyari nung panahon ng martial law. And let's call a spade and let the truth come out. Marami pong mga historical sources na magagamit ninyo para maikalat natin at mapaabot natin sa lahat ang mga nangyari noong panahon ng diktadurya. There are materials as well in Bantayag ng Mga Bayani, in the Victims Memorial Commission, even in the Commission on Human Rights, and in many other places. And there is also a historical record in our Supreme Court decisions. Kaya facts are facts as long as you cite the right, correct historical and accurate records, then there's no way we can go wrong. And I think the people deserve, especially our young people deserve to know the truth about what happened during martial law.
Well, Attorney Chell, we want to thank you for your time and for your voice and for what you're doing for justice and for remembering. Attorney Chell Diokno, human rights lawyer, chair ng Bantayog ng Mga Bayani Foundation and the Free Legal Assistance Group. Maraming salamat sa iyo.
Thank you, Alan.
This episode was produced by the team of RC Formales and Pau Requesto and edited by JR Magtoto with the wonderful people of GMA News and Public Affairs Digital. Thank you, Podmates, for listening until the very end of this podcast. Alam nyo na, nakakatalino ang mahabang attention span. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Till the next pod, mabuhay kayo at ingat lagi.